Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Boat Trader is America's largest boating marketplace with over 100,000 boats to choose from. We offer simple, comprehensive solutions for those looking to sell, find, and finance new or used boats. Visit BoatTrader.com to get started.
Here in the Northern Rockies, dark winter months are outlasted in basements, dens, and nooks where kindred souls gather together to share intel, swap fly patterns, and relive the memories from seasons past. This gathering spot, known locally as the February Room, is the inspiration for this podcast. No matter the season, the door is always open to those with a fly fishing story to tell. Brought to you by CD Fishing USA, the North American distributor for composite development fly rods and accessories. 40 years of Kiwi ingenuity and graphite technology now available at cd-fishing.us or your local CD USA dealer. Follow us on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. And remember to go fishing. Here's your host, the Carnops, and this is the February Room.
In my time in the outdoor television industry, I was introduced to Trout Unlimited chapters throughout the country. These local grassroots bodies function as the lifeblood of TU's efforts to protect, reconnect, restore our cold water fisheries. Our local TU group here in Missoula is amply named the Westlope Chapter. And today I had the great pleasure of speaking with the current president, Brandon Dwyer. Thank you so much for joining me today.
You bet, Lauren. Thanks for having me. This is exciting for me. We've got a lot of good things going on in the Westlope chapter, a lot of exciting things going on.
We have a lot to talk about. Like you said, there's a lot of events coming up and I can't wait to showcase what those are. But before we get started and learning a little bit more about our own home waters, let's hear a fishing story.
Fishing story. Okay. So I tried to do a little research, listen to a couple podcasts you guys have done, and I thought, oh man, what do I talk about? I've got to live this kind of weird, awesome Tom Sawyer-esque life when I was growing up in Kalispell, always on the water, floating, fishing, riding my bike with a fishing rod and a pocket knife, kind of wherever I wanted to go. And, maybe that way, but you know, in thinking about it, I think what's always been most important, all the stories seem to come from with who you share the water with. And that's, I keep a pretty tight fishing circle and love to be inclusive and share to some degree, but when it comes down to my free time, I fish with a pretty tight circle. And story came to mind mostly was the fishing trip we took for my bachelor party. Well, I'm no longer married, but this bachelor party story was kind of a fun one. So you hear of like the usual bachelor party destinations involve Las Vegas or, some other places. Well, I've made almost every decision in my life based on whether I could fish or not. And it was no coincidence that, what do you want to do, Brandon, for your bachelor party? Let's go fishing. We did something a little different. My friend of mine at the time had a family ranch in Northeast Washington. So probably not top of mind for bachelor party destinations, but for me, Colville, Washington, Northport, Washington was probably the only place I wanted to be at the time. It was the end of June, early July. Montana had a huge water year and everything else was really high. And I thought, this is a cool fishery that nobody's ever got to experience. So let's go do it. So we ended up on the Upper Columbia River just outside of Northport, Washington. And I don't think I'm blowing this up by talking about it. It's kind of a discovered fishery now, but at the time, it maybe wasn't, the Upper Columbia up there has just a killer dry fly fishery, giant catasatches. I mean, blanket biblical style, where the trees look like they're on fire, they're smoking, when these adult catas come out of there, as it starts to cool off in the evening, they get these great big brown drakes. They get these hexagena right before dark, which are just a giant salmon fly sized mayfly. And, let's go do that. The only kind of challenge is that you know, at the time, I remember, again, Montana was in a big water year. The Yellowstone River, you know, had peaked at 18,000 cubic feet per second. And it's a big river, you know, and I'm used to, I fished the Yellowstone. I lived in Billings at the time. And, you know, man, that's about as big as it got. Well, the Upper Columbia at that time is, you know, maybe 80,000, 100,000 cubic feet per second. I mean, that's a lot of water. That's a huge river. So you need a power boat. This isn't something you can just go do in a drift boat or something like that. You got to have motor power. You have to have gasoline. You have to have trolling motors or, you know, or the like. So we had all of that in an old ranch house to stay at in Colville. And so we went and did it. And really what's most memorable about it, again, is just the people I was with the things that we did. You know, basically it turned into day one, we get there, a couple of us head in the powerboat with our host for the trip, which was, you know, someone I've always admired and thought was really great. He's works there locally and, you know, is a landscaper and real local knowledge. And basically you just get in the powerboat and hammer up to the Canadian border and shut it down and then fish these giant eddies. On the way back, and you have pods of, you know, 50 or 100 great big Upper Columbia rainbows eating Spence caddis or emerging caddis on the surface. And we just had a great first night where, you know, kind of like this, it's almost like you're in a fever dream, you know, like there's so many bugs and the light is just incredible. And these rainbows are giant and they're eating on the surface and the water is just so big. They ride these huge giant boils that, you know, the water is 40, 50, 100 feet deep and just pushes all these bugs to the surface. And there's just these happy pods of surface eating rainbows there. And then before you know it, those big drakes pop and these giant rainbows show up. I think the largest we've ever got up there is between 8 and 10 pounds on a dry fly, which is just, you know, you got to go to New Zealand to see a lot of that. So first night was actually pretty tame. We're all business, the crew that we were with, we just wanted to get it done, you know, and we had a great night. And the next day was more, let's just kill some time and fish some of this small water. And we did. We went up to the Kettle River and had some fun. And on the way back, we noticed that there was this dirt track race, and it was like every hillbilly in Northeast Washington was there watching these dirt track races. And you know, we didn't think much of it at the time until we went to put on for the evening fishing that night. And that entire racetrack group had moved on to the boat launch. And we couldn't pack the boat down. There was, you know, the guy out with the barbecue, he's sizzling Franks. We found out real quick there was like a ringleader that you had to talk to and then get people to move. And I got this one, you know, this boat launch is like four lanes wide. They cleared like one lane for us to back down, which is kind of nervous. You know, backing down a boat in the first place is kind of, you know, they call the boat launch a divorce maker. And certainly this was more like, holy cow, like this is a lot of pressure. And I'll never forget, and I think about this all the time when I hear the name Calvin Klein. You know, we were on a bachelor party, we got our shirts off, we're getting on the boat, it's hot, you know, it's July 4th actually, and they're having a good time, and we're saying, well, let's catch some sun. We'll get up to our plan was to, you know, run up river and stake out some spots, drop a couple guys off, and my friend was wearing this Calvin Klein underwear, and his swim trunks had slumped down a little bit, and I'll never forget this kind of ringleader all of a sudden said, real loud, Calvin Klein, I thought those were girls' underwear. And next thing you know, this entire boat launch full of people were pointing and laughing at us, and kind of felt like fool. felt like playing ball. You know, it's really kind of normal, guys. But anyways, on into the night, we fish, and we have a big night. We're all fishing in the boat together, having fun, and something unforgettable. A bunch of, you know, those big hexagenas came out, and we were able to really catch some big fish. And on the way back, again, mentioned how big the water was. The boat all of a sudden would only work for about 10, 12 seconds at a time. So we're hammering down river. We're at maybe I think it was between 70 and 80,000 cubic feet per second, giant moving mass of water. And our powerboat would only work for about 10, 12 seconds at a time. And we just started getting a little nervous, you know, we have life jackets, we have all the necessary stuff, but you know, at that kind of, those kind of hydraulics, you know, life jackets just kind of, you know, be enough to make you buoyant or maybe keep you sunk. So it was kind of like, oh no, what do we do? And you know, out of nowhere, the guiding light of where we need to go and how far we need to get there was the fireworks show. That same crew that we had left on the boat launch had started lighting off fireworks in the pitch black. So 10 or 12 seconds at a time, we're doing our best to avoid islands and whatever as much as we can. And we get back to the launch and with our lives, basically, and then had to basically part the crowd again. And at this point, they were a little more under the influence. So it made it a little harder persuasion, but we got it done. And, you know, the rest of the story goes, you know, had a blast later that night. Ended up in a kind of a fun game of, I think it was kind of like, you know, capture the flag with boat bumpers back at the ranch. And there was a dead horse there in the morning. I think they probably died laughing at us, you know, doing this whole thing. And it really turned into, you know, how did all this happen and how did we get here? Somebody broke a chair. Anyways, very fun, very memorable. And then just kind of continued and again, great group of friends. And we'll never forget that bachelor party, probably unique for most bachelor parties. I don't know if they all have dead horses and you know,
poor horse.
I did. And it was awesome.
What? I mean, also, that's such technical water to be able to cast with that fast moving water on a dry fly and then catch a fish and then like have to maneuver those fast moving waters. Like, that's really tough. That must have felt like almost like salt water or smallmouth.
Totally. Yeah, it's like a fishing. It's like a big rip and there's these giant eddies. And what's really cool about that fishery, there's huge sturgeon in there too. So occasionally you'll see just this free jumping white sturgeon that like a whale will come up and just, you know, blow things up. And, but you're in these huge eddies, and where our problem started was in this huge eddy called Dead Man's Eddy, which was at the time we were like, oh shit, like that's not here of all places, you know? I'll never forget. I hooked a giant fish on one of those big mayflies. And, you know, I thought it was sounding, you know, because the water's so deep in there and it's going straight down. And I'm like, it's like a tuna, you know, I'm starting to see my backing click through and I'm looking up, you know, seeing where we're at, trying to mark where we started. And I see that same fish, my fly line's hitting straight down. And all of a sudden that fish jumps out of the water and lands like a big slab of spare ribs, you know, maybe, you know, 100 feet away. And I thought, wow, so my line is still going down. That thing's been going up. I've got a lot to recover in there, but there's so much current. It kind of keeps you tight, you know?
So yeah.
It's a really cool fishery. There's a few lodges up there. There's a blog to follow, I think, called The Evening Hatch. I mean, they do a good job of telling you what it's about. There's some unique flies that have came out of that fishery. One of them's called a hinge fly. I'm kind of a fly tying geek myself, so I really enjoyed having to prepare for that and fish that over the years. It's really tough to do from shore. There's one or two spots, but for the most part, hire the guide, go have some fun.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely a situation where you want to have a professional nearby just to get you, especially where you don't have to use fireworks as a way to get back home.
I know. Yeah, man, we were pretty puckered up. I can tell you that. That's a big river. You know, you always treat them with a lot of fear and respect. And we felt like we've really been able to do that. And at that point, you know, we're all, you know, pretty experienced watermen, but you know, I grew up in Kalispell and most of the boat work I was used to was maybe on a Cobalt or a Volvo Penta or something like that. This was an aging Hughes craft with some, what I would call nuances. You know, anybody who loves old boats know that they have some nuances. Maybe you like to be warmed up or treated a certain way or spoken to softly or loudly at times. And we figured it out. And at the end of it, it was just kind of the whole system was pressurized wrong, and I don't know why, but it worked out.
Oh God. Well, I'm glad, especially when you have like an eddy called Dead Man's Eddy. It's definitely something that you want to be very cautious on.
Yeah. But the horse was old. We didn't have nothing to do with the horse. It was a beloved family pet, but I'll never forget, you know, picking it up in the tractor and seeing it, you know, go to its eternal resting place.
Oh man. A memory for the books for sure.
Yes.
Well, as we were talking about, we have some amazing home waters here in Western Montana, and I know so much about Trout Unlimited, but maybe a lot of our listeners don't know a lot about Trout Unlimited. Can you give a little bit of information about, especially focused on more of the West Slope chapter and what you guys are all about?
Totally. Absolutely. So the West Slope chapter is one of, I believe it's 13 chapters in Montana that are your local Trout Unlimited chapter. You know, everybody kind of knows of Trout Unlimited National. There's all sorts of smaller groups of local chapters in Montana. The West Slope chapter is the second largest in Montana beside the Gallatin chapter. And it's one of my goals as president to catch that chapter. I played football here at the University of Montana, and one of my favorite things to do is beat up Bozeman. So I got my sights over there. They've got a lot of good things going on too. And we're all on the same team in this, but it's always fun to have.
You got to have a little fun.
Yeah, a little internal competition. So
it's also like when the football team, like when Montana State was making it to, you know, the champions, mm-hmm. like even though you wanted Montana State to do well, even though we mm-hmm. were not, the University of Montana wasn't out there anymore. You're like,
oh, I'm sure some people there. I might have, I don't owe much blue and gold. And you know, I had a little more personal dog in that fight, but I love the rivalry and everything that it's about. And at the end of the day, you're right. Montana's Montana. This is one of the coolest states you could ever call home or even to come visit. You know, it's the coolest shape. We've got the coolest stuff. You've got such a big variety of fish to catch and, you know, you name it. So back to the West Slope chapter. Really what we do is we raise money for cold water conservation projects. And, you know, we have a number of the other programs that we focus on too. We've got a terrific women's group called Missoula Fly Gals. They have a ton of momentum, huge, huge growth in that chapter. I always say it's contagious in a good way. I really love seeing what they do. Kate Hasterlick is one of our board members that heads that up, and I'm just amazed at what they do all the time. We also have a children's chapter that's headed by Lori Lane. We call them the Cuddy Crew. We've got some great stickers and t-shirts, and this year we have programs like Trout in the Classroom, where we raised, help them raise some rainbow trout fingerlings from eggs to fingerlings, and then release them in a put and take pond here in town. Got some great press on the news and that kind of thing with it. But really, when we're raising money for these, we're looking to conserve and protect cold water fisheries within our footprint. And in raising that funding, I mean, what I mean by critical funding is it doesn't mean we're gonna fund the whole thing. I think that's a misconception. It's something we raise just millions and we get this done, and we would love to do that, but we're all volunteers. I'm a banker. I run a branch of a local bank, a vice president for Stockman Bank here in town. And this is my passion project. This is something I want to do. So we can't do all that. We raise a lot of money. We have a ton of great supporters. But really what we raise that money for is we want to be first money in. And what I mean by that is when we're first money in, it shows that the people who live here, the people who use the resource, the people who love it, the people who might even make a living from that resource are supporting it. If we're first money in, it carries a big stick. It speaks loudly for what the long-term potential and what the impact of these projects are. So first money in is everything for us. And we work really hard to try and be first money in on some of those big projects. And one of those, if I could talk about that quickly, it has been the Rattlesnake Dam Removal Project. Rattlesnake Creek runs through basically the heart of Missoula. It's a postcard image right out in front of the Doubletree off of the bridge right in front of the university. You often see someone fishing there. That's where Rattlesnake Creek comes in and flows underneath the four B's. If you've ever had some tomato soup and a grilled cheese sandwich, that's a creek flowing underneath you. It's probably one of the most important, if not the most important, spawning tributary in the middle Clark Fork section. So but it was really limited by this, you know, historic dam that was, you know, been outdated for decades and decades and decades for the Missoula water supply. And this dam, what it really did was it just, it held back some water. So not like a traditional dam, but really it just pinched the flow of Rattlesnake Creek, which in the springtime and the spawning time has a large volume of water. It drains the Rattlesnake Wilderness, lots of snow, lots of big peaks. And it pinched it through this basically, you know, hose valve that made it almost impossible for spawning fish to get past. I mean, it was just way too much volume, way too much water. And spawning cutthroat couldn't get above there. Spawning rainbow trout couldn't get above there. And really, the water below that dam, which was maybe, you know, 4 or 5 miles above Missoula proper, the spawning habitat below that was pretty poor. You know, a lot of that has been channelized for development or, you know, other means, and, you know, didn't really have room for those fish to spawn. So, you know, the West Slope chapter was first money in on that project. And then when first money in happens, other projects, other groups start to notice, the Clark Fork Coalition notice, other conservation groups notice, they start piling on. If you know, West Slope's in for 50 grand, but we're going to be in for 50 grand. And you're going to start getting all these matching funds. And what happens next is even private businesses and private people say, well, we're in too. So, you know, the company I work for, Stockman Bank, they were one of the private businesses who stepped up and I think ended up contributed $20,000 for that removal project also. So next thing you know, when the grant writers get to that point of, okay, check the boxes, who was first money in, who's involved, and they see all these local groups and then they see buy-in by other groups, it's important. This is going to get elevated. This is going to get prioritized for other funding. And realistically, it happened fast. You know, it was, you know, something within the last 4 or 5 years that we thought, let's set a goal. Let's make this happen in 10 years, 15 years, whatever it is. And we got so much support from everybody that it happened fast. And really right now we're excited to see the effects. You know, it's been gone for, you know, one full spawning season. Now we're coming up this is the first true, let's see what happened. Let's monitor. Let's see how many more reds we have, all those kind of things. And it could create some more exciting fishing opportunities, which I can't necessarily talk about now, but in the future, you know, keep an eye out.
Yeah. You know, I think you say a really good thing about the volunteer is that you're doing this. You aren't getting paid to do this, correct? President.
Yeah, like
you're
no, doing I'm this- not getting paid. No, this is pure passion. This is something everybody on our board, nobody's getting paid. This is us. You know, we have lawyers, we have photographers. I'm a banker. We have artists. We have, people who work in accounting. We have, you know, all of those things. This is something that's important to us and important to, why we live here, why we do the things we do, why we fish, why we exist. And so this is, you know, hours and hours and hours and hours of our personal time away from our kids and in some cases our jobs and other responsibilities and often from fishing, the thing we like most.
Right.
We're passionate about cold water conservation. We live in what I call the cold water cathedral light. You know, I'm from Kalispell and I always called that the cold water cathedral with all the forks of the Flathead, you know, the Bob Marshall and the Middle Fork and the North Fork, true cold water refuges for, vanishing cold water refuges. And Missoula was there and we're trying to get it back there. You know, that's our goal is we have four amazing rivers. And then there's something like, I've heard 86 fishable tributaries off of those and they're all important. And they all, a lot of those, you know, we've noticed they need work, they need help. They need help getting cold again. So that's what we're doing.
I love that. Cold water cathedral. I mean, that's
what the trademark that.
Yeah, you need to.
So merch.
Bumper sticker that out. But you know, when I say like volunteer and the fact that you talk about time and energy, that is an understatement. I signed up for the PTO And I didn't have to give up that much time, but I had to give up a little bit. And then afterwards I was like, you know what? Never mind. This is too much. This is too much work of the little time I had to give. So to be the West Slope chapter, I just want people to understand that there is 100% passion going into this to make sure that our home waters are exact, that people can write stories about it, that we have a podcast that people can talk about. And I just have to say a huge thank you, because I can't even imagine the amount of time and energy that you are spending on this to make sure that things are being accomplished, that we're preserving, and to be the first one to go out there and send that bill so that when people are looking at these, the rattlesnake and like, oh wow, West Slope chapter is part of this. This is serious business. So first off, a huge thank you for making that huge contribution to time and energy, because without that, Montana, especially Missoula, would not have the beautiful waters, or nor people would we have the recreation that we are seeing still continue and to continue to grow. So with that being said, I know you said that there's a lot of tributaries that are coming out and there's more projects. What do you see the foreseeable future with West Slope next mission?
Totally. So next, as far as next missions go, we want to monitor just how well fish respond to being able to go really the length of Rattlesnake Creek, the realistic length that they can go up there. That's fun. You know, another project, and really kind of what the West Slope chapter has adopted as really our kind of, you know, our baby, and what's we feel we could improve the most, and really what we want to preserve the most, because it's already great, but we want to make it better and keep it that way, is Rock Creek. Anybody who's lived in Missoula, I mean, you talk about even across the country, you mentioned Rock Creek, and everybody kind of will wax poetic about a day they had on Rock Creek where they got to do it themselves. They got to be there themselves. They got to experience what a freestone trout fishery could, the potential it could actually be. And that's just sacred for Missoula, and it's just sacred for the Rocky Mountain West and for fly fishing and for the West Slope chapter. That's our big thing. So what we decided, a few years ago now, is that we took a huge step forward in raising funds for a full-time project coordinator on Rock Creek. And we partnered with Trout Unlimited National, and we basically committed, I believe it's about $40,000 a year to help pay the salary of that individual. Which is a big ask from us. I mean, we work really hard to raise that, but that's how important it is for us. That's what we want. That individual is Tess Scanlon, and she, I don't know if we could have a better person for that job. She's done such a great, tremendous job of, you know, whether it's, you know, identifying culvert projects to where we can, you know, it's all about connectivity when you're talking spawning tributaries or connectivity for cold water refuges on Rock Creek, whether it's a culvert project for a feeder stream or water rights or access or, habitat improvements, landowner relations in general, just an absolute rock star. And it's been really fun to see those projects, and I want to see them continue on Rock Creek. You know, everybody thinks there's nothing wrong with Rock Creek. You know, it's the best fishery really we probably have in town, the most consistent in our area, but it can always be better. And, it's been identified as one of those cold water refuges, really because of a lot of the public land and limited development up there that might be one of those final cold water refuges. If they all go away, that might be one of the last ones to go. So we want to extend that. We want to have that contribute to the health of the Middle Clark Fork, Upper Clark Fork. And, being able to fund that position and have that position is vitally important.
I absolutely love Rock Creek, and I don't even want to maybe say too much about it because it is such a special place. But I think what makes Rock Creek also very special is that you can go fishing and not see anybody there. And exactly. That's, I think, as we were just talking about earlier, is what is a good day on the water? I think about this a lot, and it's not necessarily sometimes catching the biggest fish, but sometimes being on the water and not seeing anybody there. Because if you ask any angler, you're like, hey, before you ask about how the fishing was, you always maybe follow up with, well, was it busy?
Right.
And That is probably the biggest question I have is I would rather go, my destination for fishing is mostly based on there won't be anybody there.
Right. Yeah.
Before I'm like, not about catching big fish. I'm like, well, was it busy?
Right. No, you've nailed it there, Lauren. And I think what's so special about what you're describing and the opportunity you have on Rock Creek is that, I seek angling for its ability to provide me as an angler or whoever I'm taking the opportunity at a singular focus. So much of our lives, we have distractions. I basically sell money for a living. You know, I have an active email inbox. I have employees. I work for a big company, and I don't have a singular focus throughout the day. There's so many focuses. I've got two terrific kids, almost 4 and 7, and I don't have a singular focus necessarily when I'm with them. But when I'm fishing, I can. And if you're on a busy river, many of our more popular rivers, you're constantly thinking of others. Am I being a jerk? Am I hogging this spot for too long? Or where do I need to shift to avoid this angler? Or, you know, that whole boat launch etiquette, that whole angling etiquette. You have a bunch of other river user types like tubers and things like that, that are these constant distractions kind of that shift away from that singular focus. But when you can be at a place like Rock Creek or someplace with solitude, in between your own ears, you are allowed that singular focus that I think is just so vital for your mental health, even of I'm just trying to catch one more, or I'm just trying to catch the next one, or I'm trying to figure out this one solution of why won't it eat the fly this way? And it's this kind of weird creativity within this singular focus that I crave. I need it. You know, if when I don't have that singular focus or I go a long stretch without it, I miss it. I'm not the same. I'm maybe ruffled or crabby, which I've been known to be. But I don't get to fish enough, but I think I always say if people could just go fishing more, I think a lot of the problems in the world might go away, you know? And, when we have something like that in our backyard, it's really important to preserve the ability to do that and to make it great and to keep it great. So Rock Creek is maybe the most easily accessed place for someone to do that within our footprint and really cherished. I mean, it's really the world over. I mean, I've been in airports and heard from people talking about Rock Creek and pretty cool.
No, absolutely. I think you say that, you know, it's just like when you're thinking about you're on the boat and you have somebody ahead of you, you're like, I'm going to go forward, but then am I going to ruin their water? And it's just like this constant anxiety, which is the last thing you want to do.
I'll hop to the left. I'll go river left if they're right. Or where do they go? Where, you know, and you're being reactionary to not necessarily the fish, but to somebody else. And you just don't have that same singular focus or it's just in shorter spans. But when you get to, a full day of, you know, you just having to maybe wave to somebody on the road, which you kind of enjoy anyways, or to sit in the shade and still not have someone float by or go by. The float season so short on Rock Creek. So that's why it's important to us and really kind of our home adopted water. When you're driving up the road, as soon as you pass the big five valleys, pull out there right before Ekstrom's, there's a big West Slope chapter, Trout Unlimited sign. We revamped that. We actually sold the old sign at auction. I think we got pretty good money for it. Just because it had been there for so long. Now it's a little more modern. It's got a logo on there. You know, basically it's welcome to Rock Creek. We're the West Slope chapter. We put a lot of resources into this. I hope you enjoy your day and protect it well.
I love that. And when you say like protect it well, like what are you expecting people to do when they enter, say they see the sign, like please protect it. Like what are your expectations for our guest on these waters?
Be courteous, treat the fish the way you think they should be treated, be respectful of others and their space and soak it in, enjoy it. I mean, this is a really unique thing you're getting to experience here. You know, after you get through the first 7 miles, there's another 40 miles where, you know, there's you know, you can almost just drop in anywhere without needing to worry about, you know, is this somebody else's property or what is this? This is yours to enjoy. And, that experience a lot depends on the river users and the watershed users of just how you respect it and how you use it.
As the president of the Trout Unlimited chapter, what is the biggest problem you're seeing as people who are using the water? Like, what is the biggest red flags that you're seeing as people?
You know, that's kind of a lightning rod. It's a hard to identify because I want to welcome all river users. I mean, it's everybody has a little bit different way they want to do it, and I welcome that. I don't want any more licenses or permits or rules or regulations necessarily, but all river users kind of have a different idea for their day. And I just, you know, would like it if everybody just could respect each other. And, you know, like the tuber crowd is going to use the river different than a recreational floater with their family. And the recreational floater with their family is going to be different than the fishing crowd. And I don't know
kayakers.
if there's kayakers. There's really not there's, you know, that could be a whole nother separate podcast, but I wouldn't say there's any real red flags. We just have a lot more usage in our footprint now, and it'll become an issue, I think, that maybe needs to be addressed. But if we can all just be respectful of each other and what that other user wants, you know, like the tubers of the recreational crowd, not necessarily fragging the banks, you know, stay Middle River or someplace like that, you know. And same thing with the angler, maybe have a little more patience at the boat launch with the tuber crowd or something like that. So it's a tough one. And it's a sure way to get some emotions involved too.
It really is. I think as we keep getting more recreation, but like you, I agree. I think that you have the equal right to go fish where you want to, but it's more about being aware of your surroundings. Do you remember that tuber that I still to this day, every time I pass this bridge, I think about the tuber or who was it? The guy that was tubing down the river and someone jumped off the bridge and landed on him.
Oh,
I still to this day, do you don't remember that?
No.
It's happened like, oh my gosh, every time I go over, I go under a bridge, I'm just like, please tell me no one's going to be jumping. Cause I think about that poor tuber that the guy jumped and like landed on his legs. I mean, serious injuries, oh my gosh. Anyways, to this day, I still think about it. So,
I don't want to be again critical that nor hypocritical. I've done some tubing in my day, but I almost always had a pair of goggles and maybe a snorkel. I think, you know, I caught some guff from everybody I've ever tubed with that I'm always just looking for bull trout and cutthroat and, you know, where are they at? You know, it's more insight. So I look like a total dork out there, but that's what I am. I'm a total fishing dork. That's like I said, it's almost all I think.
Well, you have the true passion when you're doing this all for free. I mean, I just even listening to you saying like raising money, working really hard to have a full-time staff when you're doing this for volunteer work. I mean, just really reflects your passion into our rivers here in Western Montana. We talk about the TU chapter and how can people become more involved with their local chapters, whether they're in Western Montana or outside of Montana?
Absolutely. No, we've got a great website. Hopefully we can post that. Email will get you a membership. It's free. We don't want to hit you up for that necessarily. Come to the chapter meetings. We put on some great speeches in the cabin fever months, usually after hunting season and before the squalas pop. And where, you know, on a Wednesday night, you can come hear someone like Kelly Gallup or Jeff Currier or Brian Chan, or we've had some just terrific speakers. I've even done one, which I don't know if that's a big name, but I sure had fun.
The biggest name, the president. Come on. When you say president, people, you got to be like riding on a horse. Like it's the president, Brandon Dwyer, and you just need to like wave. I mean, that gives you perks. Trust me.
Absolutely. Usually it's just free beers, which I almost do anything for. So
that's great. That's a perk.
Yeah, totally. So that and really what we need most is we need to raise money. So we have events. We've got one coming up. We have an online auction starting on the 15th, actually. where you can bid on items, purchase items, you can raise the paddle, quote unquote, and just flat out donate. And we've had some terrific success with that. We're also having what we're calling River Fest, because we do live in River Central here. And we want to celebrate the rivers. We want to celebrate the people who use them, the people who support them. Tickets are $25 a piece. You can get them on the website, which we can post. It'll get you a handful of beers and a burger, and there'll be some casting games, some casting instruction. There'll be some face painting for the kids. There'll be some vendors there. We'll have the Watershed Education Network there with the table. We'll have George Kiesel tying flies there. He's one of the most talented fly tires on the planet. George will be spinning up bugs. I don't know if he's taking requests, but if you've ever sat in front of George, you just kind of, your jaw drops and you just like to watch him. He's a real maniac at the vise. So it's going to be at the Heritage Hall, historic Fort Missoula. Even if, you know, it's going to be the same weekend as Maggot Fest, which I know we're competing with, but we got different user groups. So wander on over, come get your fish and fix in. Again, I think it's a pretty cheap ticket. $25 gets you a handful of beers and a burger, and it all supports cold water fisheries. I'll be there, maybe emceeing, shaking hands, wanting to meet you, and get you involved in the chapter. This year, we'll have some what I call field trips, where we'll do tree planting. We'll do some restoration work on some Rock Creek tributaries. Some awesome projects Paul Parsons has done up in the 9 Mile. We'll do some follow-up up there. So there's lots of fun things there. I know the Missoula Fly Gals, if you're a lady angler, you're absolutely on the leading edge of the most fastest growing part of the sport of fly fishing, and maybe the most awesome. It's really fun to see so many women get involved. We've got a number of retreats planned with them. I know they have a free fly fishing clinic. I think it's coming up this weekend. I think it's full already, but keep your eye out. One of our most popular events has been the women only trailer back drift boat or raft trailer backup clinic.
I love that.
I thought maybe at first it would be in these times, maybe too sexist to offer something like that. But at the same time, I feel the pain and the nervousness at a boat launch. And I've been backing boats up and trailers up for a long time. And when we offered it, it was like immediate full. So keep an eye out for that. I really want to do that again. We've had some great fishing guides and other women even as instructors for that. And so keep an eye out for things like that. That's what you can expect from us. In addition to all the chapter meetings.
I absolutely love that. Because it is so nerve-wracking reversing the truck and the trailer. Yeah. I've done it with Justin. And one time I was like, okay, there was nobody there. I'm like, let me do it, Justin. Nobody's here. And I swear, I got in the car. I hit reverse. And, you know, I'm doing my thing. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, a boat shows up. I'm like, never mind. I hit park. I'm like, Justin, come on. I don't want anyone pointing at me. I don't want anyone laughing at me. I also don't want to be like the problem where they're like, we need to get on the water. And this person over here is someone's like, turn left, turn right. And you just need some time where you're like, you know what? I just need to reserve this. I'm actually thinking I'm going to go to the Osprey Stadium. And like just during the day, you know, like when everyone's like at work, just kind of sit back there. And so if anyone's driving by the Osprey Stadium, seeing somebody with a trailer, that's
great idea. You know, I think that's actually where we put it on. So great idea. And, you know, especially it's often one of those things maybe best learned from someone who's not your spouse or significant other. Just as the way those go. I sell money for a living. I'd make loans. And I have two things I call divorce makers. One of them is a kitchen remodel. The other one being the boat launch. So just be mindful of those things. If you are teaching your spouse or significant other or going through a kitchen remodel. So
top two things. Don't go fishing after the kitchen remodel and have them teach them how to reverse a boat. Noted.
Yeah, unless you're just into that kind of pain. Yeah.
Well, Brandon, before we sign off, let's hear one more fishing story to just end our wonderful conversation today.
Absolutely. One of the things I'm very passionate about is getting kids involved in fishing. And I had some, you know, my fortunate that my father, when I was really young, I think I lifted on my own my first brook trout. I lived on a creek west of Kalispell. You know, we lived way back in the woods, had a pet mule deer, the whole thing. It was like little Grizzly Adams family. My dad, I lifted my first brook trout out of the water on my own when I was 2.5, 3 years old. And I've just always felt that connection, and it'd be something I'm going to do the rest of my life. And then, you know, moving into Kalispell proper, lived on a spring creek and all those, again, that kind of Tom Sawyer floating, fishing, biking, pocket knife lifestyle for a long time. So I'm really, I feel like that's just a treasure for my life and what that's meant to me. And I've always like to share that with children. And I've done that with my own. And it's something I want to do more with the West Slope chapter. But one story that sticks out, and I happen to have some of it on video that I look at and smile and tear up and cry is probably being able to introduce my little girl to her first, you know, hook it, reel it, lift it out of the water on your own. We're able to go to a small tributary outside here in Missoula and, you know, put a little soft tackle on, let her just triple whip that little three weight as much as she could. And just that tight line swing with that little soft tackle, watch her eyes light up on, about a 10-inch cutthroat, and just to see that engagement and the excitement, and to hear those words that I didn't know if you would hear when the experience was over. You know, you don't know if, you know, your child is going to say, "How about some ice cream?" or "Can we go to the park?" or you know, "Can we go home?" or what did it mean to him? And she said, "Can we catch another one?"
Oh, I think about I love that.
It's like that, you know, that's as pure as it gets. That's the reason why you do it. That's the reason why you're so passionate, because there's always going to be, if you keep creating these opportunities for children or someone who's new to fishing for the first time, you create those opportunities. That's a feeling that you'll chase the rest of your life when you just want the next one. And it's something like engaging with nature. It's engaging with a fish. You have such a unique opportunity as a trout angler, an angler in general, to be able to corral nature, hold it in your hands, admire it for a short period of time, and just let it go back in the water and do its thing. Or, you know, in some cases you might take it home and eat it and feed somebody or yourself. And what a great opportunity. And I love sharing that. And no better way to do it than with children or your own kids or friends' kids or somebody who might not get that opportunity. So that's what it's all about for me. That's the story that sticks out and keeps me going, and okay with ending on.
Well, you know, I always say with passion comes conservation, and then, you know, comes action. And so you're a true saying, because you do this for free. You spend time, you do a commitment to the waters that we love. And thank you so much for your commitment to the waters of Missoula and Western and areas around our tributaries, because without that, we wouldn't have a place to recreate, and nor could we have people come and visit this great city and enjoy these home waters. So thank you so much, and look forward to this upcoming weekend. It will be fun. And I love that it's a family affair. You know, totally. I love it that we're making, you know, it's not just for it's not for adults. Kids get to see what is going on around in their community.
You bet. That'll start on the 22nd of May. Noon to 4, approachable hours. We're giving away fly rods. We have raffles for water masters. We'll have some boats there. We'll do a little boat biology, as far as here's the anchor rope, here's the oarlock. I mean, all that kind of stuff that you might be too afraid to ask at the boat store. We want to make it approachable and fun for everybody. And I've told the face painter to get ready to paint a lot of rainbow trout and brown trout, that kind of stuff. So, and there's maybe a kid casting name too, so we'll get him introduced.
Oh, maybe Brandon, you can have some trailer backing up for preparations.
You know, with Megafest right next door, we're going to try and keep that at maybe a minimum, but keep an eye on that in the future. We want that to be a focused event for sure.
As a reminder for our listeners, Maggot Fest is the biggest rugby festival here in Missoula, and where you take shots.
West,
so. Is it where you take shots of tequila with maggots in it? Hence the name. Maggot Fest. It's disgusting. I partaked in my college years. I will never do it again. I'm still recovering from it.
Yes, that's part of the reason why we were okay with that weekend, because the weather is almost always nice for Maggot Fest, because we always think God loves Maggot Fest and he wants us to be happy. And if we piggyback on that, then maybe we'll have nice weather for this too. It's inside and outside, so we have both.
Oh, wonderful. Well, nothing more fun though than to go to a grocery store during Maggot Fest and see everyone's outfits. That's like my favorite thing to do. I'm such a people watcher. I love it. Yes. That's why I probably should never have anyone watch me going down backing up a trailer. But thank you again, Brandon, so much for joining me today. And I can't wait for our paths to cross on the water.
Go to thefebruaryroom.com, where you can access a complete library of our podcast and read more about our guests, their fishing stories, and favorite fly patterns. We're always looking for exceptional fly fishing yarns, and if you have one to spin, shoot us an email at info@thefebruaryroom.com. The February Room is always free, but if you feel like throwing a nickel in the pond, we appreciate any additional listener support. For companies and individuals interested in sponsorship opportunities, please contact us for our media kit. Thanks for stopping by the February Room, and we'll see you down here next week.